direct from the web, it's Billy Masters Live. And now, please welcome your host, Billy Masters.
Oh my God, we already have one love. Look at that. Hey everybody, welcome to Billy Masters Live. I am, of course, your host, Billy Masters. And let's see, it's been a while since anyone's had to do this. So today, oh my God, they're right on top of things in the booth. Today is Wednesday, April 12th, 2023. It is like a million degrees outside. I am in Boston right now. And it is warmer now than it was in Florida last week. Been a busy week. I was in Florida last week at the beach house, then flew up to New York literally for 4 hours to see our guests today, and then had to get back to Boston because it was my father, Big Daddy Masters' 90th birthday. Can I just tell you, there's no way I'm making it to 90, but 90, and he kind of knows like who everybody is and where everybody is. The hearing's going, the eyes are going, you know, but, you know, 90, just amazing. So, you know, and before people, you know, people love to write me when I complain about my parents, and they're like, well, at least you still have parents, sent. And I'm like, yeah, all right, I get it. But they're still annoying. And, but 90, and I appreciate that. And I'm very fortunate to have both parents still alive at this advanced age. But let me talk about our guest. So I was in Fort Lauderdale at the beach house in the water playing on the beach with Frank DeCaro and Jim Colucci, two of my favorite people. And we were talking about Judy Gold, and we were talking about how there is a, you know, I don't want to say this in a way that's going to sound mean or insulting, but there is a type of comedian, an in-your-face, says-it-like-it-is person that I don't see a lot of these days. And Judy is one of that group of people who has hung in there. And there were people, oh God, you know, there were people like Adrian Tolsch and Hilda Vincent. Joy Behar is like that. Joan Rivers is like that. My friend Lynn Samuels, who is a radio commentator. That, you know, maybe, it, you know, they all, aside from Joy Behar, all of those women I just mentioned are Jewish. So maybe I have a type. But they're, you know, it is so important to have people who actually tell the truth in your life on stage. And Judy's show, oh, you know, I've got like all sorts of images here. Judy's show, Yes, I Can Say That, which is based on her best-selling book, Yes, I Can Say That, When They Come for the Comedians, We're All in Trouble. Judy's show is, you know, I wasn't sure what to expect because so many times I said this in my column. Actually, you know what? I'm just going to quote what I said in my review. Comedians doing one-person theatrical shows can be a tricky venture. Quite often, the conceit is basically a transplant of a stand-up set. Not so with this show. Cleverly staged by B.D. Wong, who I sat behind during the show, and effortlessly and breathlessly performed by Gold. Blah, blah, blah. Best-selling book. Blah, blah, blah. There's a cross between a history lesson, a confessional, and a cautionary tale. If history has taught us anything, it's that it can be repeated. Judy draws a compelling line between the rise of Nazi Germany and today's political climate. She also reminds us that the most effective weapon against hate speech is more speech. Whenever times are bleak, the comedians have not only spoken truth to power, but also provided us with the courage to face anything and laugh. So I think that says it all. Please welcome my friend, Judy Gold.
Hi.
How are you, Jude?
I'm good. I feel like I should have gotten dressed up because you have that fancy shirt on.
No, no. But, it's just, it's so hot and it was light.
It's 90,000 degrees outside.
Yeah.
And my makeup's at the theater. So.
can I just, you know, Judy has been on this show many times. And last summer when I saw her in Provincetown doing her show, she saw me in the audience. She's like, all right, Billy, what day is your show on? Usually it used to be Thursdays. Right. And she tells the audience, so this is how it goes. Wednesday night around midnight, I get a text. So what are you doing tomorrow? Yeah, are you free?
Exactly, right.
And she's like, and her first question is, who dropped out? So she's gotten me back because we have rescheduled this a few times.
Because
she's
we were scheduled, busy. Yeah, and we had tech rehearsal and it just, yeah.
And it's a very, very, I don't want to say complicated show, but it is. There's a lot of light cues and video cues and images. It's very cleverly staged. Did you want to make it more of a theatrical experience?
Well, for all my one-person shows, I've always wanted them to be theatrical experiences because you're right. A lot of people will just transfer their stand-up to a theater. And right. That's not what I wanted to do. I haven't done that with any of my other two shows, off-Broadway mm-hmm. shows. But this one is so important to me. And having BD as the director, and he's the one that made, you know, because the book is really funny and entertaining, but it's also a lot of information. And I didn't want this to be a TED Talk. I wanted this to be a theatrical experience, which is what, thank you, you said it was. And and to make it that, you know, BD said, we have to get really personal. You have to have some kind of epiphany on stage. And I had no idea until we went into tech rehearsal what he had in mind for the staging. Like I was
really,
yeah. We were really in rehearsals, honing the script and really making the case for the script only. And he was every night working with these designers and the show, the backdrop of the show of the stage. Are all these cards that I keep all my jokes on. I mean, if you go, I have them all. Here's one. I mean, I have them all over the house and they're just.
Right. We all did it. And people who saw Joan Rivers' documentary, she had them in a card catalog.
Everyone has cards and notebooks. I mean, Joan's was really organized. Mine are all over the fucking house. Oh, am I allowed to curse on this? Oh,
you are. It's me, please.
But, yeah, and so BD had this idea of making the stage all these cards. And I went through my cards from like 35 years ago. And
Took
photos of a bunch of cards and my notebooks, like some parts of my notebooks. And mm-hmm. the designer, Lex Lang, he really did such a nice job and put these cards all over the stage. And it's so funny because people come on the stage to look at the cards and they
were doing
jokes.
That when I was there. Yeah.
They're just jokes. And during rehearsals, I would, you know, BD would like pick a joke and I would do these old jokes that I had totally forgotten about, which is really funny.
Is it true? I had heard that the script for the show changed a lot during tech as well, that it's unrecognizable.
Absolutely. Even the first preview, it is 1,000 times different.
Really? In what way? Really,
well, we didn't have, I feel like we didn't have enough rehearsal. Oh, first of all, the whole ending is different from the first preview. The first preview, also one of the main characters in the first preview was me yelling line and the stage manager giving me my line. Like I was like line, I, you know, because we were still working on it, but we reworked the whole ending. We cut some stuff out that we didn't need. And I love it. I'm so proud of how it came out. I don't think there's any fat in it.
You know, I'm curious watching it. Is it something that you can travel with? Because it seems so specific to the production. You'd lose like some of those sound and light cues. But could you travel with this?
I think so. We're working on that now because I really do want to travel with it. But yeah, we'd have to do some pared down, I guess, version of the set. But those cues, those light and sound cues are all, you know, in a whatever, however they do it, you know,
program it in,
file, and just program, yeah. whatever. And yeah, I think there's a way to do it, but I do think all of that adds so much to the telling of the story that you get to see.
Oh, and the videos.
People. Yeah.
The videos, because this, you know, I don't mind giving things away because, like, people, it closes this weekend. And right. I think it might be sold out. So, you know, good luck. But
no, there's seats for Saturday and Sunday. Friday's sold
out. Okay, yeah. Good. But there's videos on the wall, on the floor. It's like you are enveloped in comedy.
Right. It is.
You know,
it
is. You know, and all I kept thinking, and, you know, I mean, because, you know, all of us who are comedians, we're a little egocentric. And I said, it's almost like she's taken her place in the world of comedy.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I had someone else say, an older gentleman at a talk back was like, I've never seen someone give the stage to so many other comedians, you know, to really celebrate them. And it is sort of, someone said to me last night, this is like a love story at a stand-up comedy.
Oh, it absolutely is. But the book is as well.
Yeah, but this is also a cautionary tale. And I just, it's something I think about all the time. Is what's going on in the world of comedy and censorship. Mm-hmm. And yet, oh, shut up. Silence.
It's all right.
They're coming to
get
me.
If people listen to your podcast and her podcast, Kill Me Now, available where all fine podcasts are found. This show is also on a podcast. Her podcast is interrupted by sirens routinely.
I live on a major thoroughfare in New York and there's hospitals like 20 blocks away. And I'm just like, shut up.
And all I keep thinking, listening to the podcast, do you just, even when you're not recording, when a siren goes by, are you yelling at it?
No, you know what? I really don't even think about it.
Oh,
unless
good.
I'm
all
recording.
Right.
You know, I'm just so used to it.
But going back to the show, I think what's interesting is that because we had you on when the book came out, which, you know, again, what fantastic timing to promote a book. You would think that people during the pandemic would be sitting home reading.
No.
And yet, no, they weren't.
No, 98%
we got dumber, actually.
Yeah. 98% of books that came out in 2020 sold fewer than 5,000 copies. Okay.
That is,
I mean, we're dumb. I mean, look at this country. We're just a bunch of idiots.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, is that it seemed at the time impossible that the book could be less timely than the show is now. Like, the show is even more time. You would think, there's a moment of time and now we're going back.
Right. No, it's getting worse and worse. And the idea that that government officials, legislators, can say whatever the hell they want and keep their jobs, and a comedian says a joke you don't like and you want them never to perform again? No, sorry. It's not how it works.
I just don't understand why some groups give in to certain voices and other groups don't. It's so subjective.
It fits their narrative. It all fits their narrative. That's it.
I guess. Well, you know, it's also, you know, I hate to point fingers at the liberals, but the wokeness has gotten out of control.
Oh, it's so dangerous. It's like, come on, people. You know, when you take the intent out of, like, a comedian's telling a joke,
mm-hmm.
and they haven't even finished the joke, but you heard a word you don't like, that's just as bad as what the other side does. You're not listening to the intent of the comedian. You decided that person can't say this word or use this word, or you have issues with that word. And then everything's not about you. Sorry.
Or the topic. You know, the topic makes me uncomfortable.
Then too bad. The world, there's a Fran Lebowitz quote in the show. Being offended is a natural consequence of leaving the house. Get over it, people.
You know, I wrote about this a couple weeks ago. So I went to the Museum of Science in Cambridge. And, you know, we went as kids every year with the school field trip.
Right.
And there is an exhibit called The Cycle of Life or something. And there used to be a statue of a mother who just gave birth nude, but plaster. It's not like this painting or anything, holding a baby up. And it was like this beautiful thing, a mother and child. So we went to the Museum of Science a couple weeks ago, and I said, oh, I'm sure things have changed. Well, the cycle of life is still there, but there's no nude woman.
Right.
And I'm like, well, things have changed. Maybe they move things around, whatever. At the end of the museum, in this little alcove of like history of the museum, and I took the picture, the nude woman is behind plexiglass in a closet. And I'm like, because this offended somebody. It used to be in the hallway. You'd walk by it like the Venus de Milo.
Women are just objects. Women are just objects to these people.
And again, this isn't a nude woman. This is life. That's what this is. Again, the intent. You're not going to the Museum of Science to jerk off. You're at the Museum of Science to learn something.
Well, they don't even understand. They don't understand art. They don't understand human beings. They don't understand.
The Statue of David.
Right, exactly. What is wrong with you?
Come on.
It's beyond.
Your podcast is called Kill Me Now, and it's because anytime something annoys you, just kill me now.
Oh my
God.
I get annoyed at
everything.
It's really bad. And mostly it's stuff that, like, I really hate injustice and hypocrisy and incompetence. Like, it's just annoying and just moronic behavior. Like, All right, so I live in New York. There's a lot of walking that I can't tell you how many times people are looking down at their phone and about to bump into me. And my son gets really mad at me because I'll raise my arms. I'll go like that. I'll go, hello. And he's like, why can't you just walk by them? Why can't you just walk by? No, they don't own the fucking street because they're not looking. No, too bad. I'm leaving the subway. They're walking up the stairs like this.
Yeah. Oh, like right. Really right slowly. Into you.
But, yeah. Or walking.
Or they stop
the street.
In the middle of a sidewalk.
Yes.
They stop.
Right.
Oh,
no,
I can't.
Consideration. So, everything's about them, me.
So you mentioned your son. You have two sons, Ben and Henry. At the show that I was at, Ben was there. He was seeing across the hall. Yes. So, and again, know, it's so interesting to watch his reaction to everything you say. There are times he's laughing, times he's leaning over, I'm sure saying, that's not how it happened, or whatever.
Right.
And I was there with our mutual friend, Aaron Quill, and I didn't even notice Ben was there. And I heard somebody behind me say, oh my God, that guy's so gorgeous. He's like a John Kennedy. And I'm like, where the hell is this John Kennedy? And then they said, oh, but he's got to be a Jew. Look at the hair. He's got great hair. And I said,
hey, who was this?
And I don't know who it was. It was some gay guy, you know, clearly.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
Just so people know, there's your son.
No, that's a bad one. That's not what he looks like.
How about that?
He's mutt. Wait. I wish I could show you.
You don't
here.
Like nothing.
Wait, here. Both of my sons are very beautiful people.
They are. Oh, this as kids. Look at that.
Oh my God. Oh, I look
Come
good
on.
There.
Look at you, the good. Mother.
Wait. I'm the mother. Wait, hold
you
on.
You are the mother's, right?
Wait, hold on, Ben.
Okay.
Here he is.
And he's on your podcast this week. Did I read that?
So this week, here he is. This week, oh, my baby. He's my little baby. I'm going to show you a picture. I had him on the podcast because I know you don't follow this because you're Billy Masters. But, you know, it was March Madness. It was the NCAA.
Yes.
Here he is. Wait.
That's a hot guy. And straight. How do you have a straight kid?
I don't. They're both straight. It's so fucking annoying. Anyway, so he's on my podcast. So in the NCAA women's championships, there was a big to-do because of Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, both amazing players. You know, they're saying Angel taunted Caitlin and Caitlin taunted Angel, and one's black and one's white, and the unfairness in the way it was reported. And so, and also college basketball is such a huge thing. And I thought Ben's home for Passover. I want to talk I want to talk about what it's like to play college basketball and what his thoughts were about Angel and Caitlin. And it was, I thought we were going to talk for like 15 minutes. We talked for like 45 minutes. And of course, you know, he's just, he's great. He's just, I love my son so much, but they are straight, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. I know. Because I've met them many times in P-Town. Somebody just texted me and wants to know, you're not on the schedule for P-Town. I didn't even know that.
I am. I'm going to the post office this year. Because the Art House, which is, I love the art. I love Mark Cortel.
And it's been your home for a while.
Right. I was at the post office. I started there in 92, I think. And then I went to the Art House. They're not going to be open every single day of the week. And so I was like, I'll go back to the post office. Plus, I have to cancel shows all the time. I always feel bad because I get other, I'll get booked on a TV show or something. And so, yeah. So
you will be posting that on judygold.com. And did I read that you're recording, doing a recording at Helium in a couple weeks? What is this?
Okay. So at Helium, and I have to start working on that. Thanks for reminding me. I want to do an album of all my jokes about my mother.
Oh, wow.
And I'm doing it on Mother's Day. And
oh, great.
I've always wanted to put an album together of just my mother jokes because, you know, she died in 2015. Oh, yeah. And you were talking earlier about how you have both your parents. Well, I'm an orphan. Yeah,
right.
So you stop fucking complaining about your
parents. But you know.
Yeah, they're pained. But my father died when I was 27. My mother died in 2015.
Right.
Be happy of your parents.
I am. Everyone says at some point I'm going to say, oh, if only. So, you know, I get it.
Right. But you don't get it until it happens. Anyway, so I'm recording
Kenny
an album.
Sells me. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm recording an album of all my mother jokes. So, yeah.
And your mother is alive in your podcast.
Always. My mother's, she's in the show.
Is she in your show? I was just going to say, she used to be the tagline in your podcast. Now you're doing the so long yourself.
Yeah. Now I do the so long myself because, you know, she would never say goodbye. She would only say so long. She said goodbye's too permanent.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Have you picked that up?
I say so long all the time. But now everyone, yeah, I say so long. And everyone who really knows me is always like, so long. So it's, yeah.
All right. I got pictures. I want to get your impressions on people. And the first one is hard because we were both there this night.
Oh, God.
So this was Joan's last performance.
No, this was Joan in Provincetown.
Right. Well, that was the last big performance, not at the Laurie Beecham, right, but the last big performance at Town Hall, because I was there as well. How important, I know, but how important was Joan to you?
Joan was everything to me. As a little girl, you know, I talk about this in the show. Her and Toadie Fields. I mean, Toadie Fields died when I was 15. But Joan, the speaking the truth, the fearlessness, the work ethic, the fact that she became persona non grata and picked herself up. Nothing she did came easy. She worked her ass off. No one has made me laugh more than Joan Rivers. I mean, that night at that show at Town Hall, I was like,
you couldn't catch your breath.
You could not. It was, everything was just so perfect. And she was so humble and kind and classy. And brilliant, so smart, you know. And then even that, you know, when she, when they were holding vigil for her before she passed, you know, Melissa bought pizza for the people waiting outside and donuts and coffee the morning of her funeral for the onlookers. I mean, just a classy, and you know, rarely do you and your parents laugh at the same comedians. She's Chris Rock said she's the Mount Rushmore of comedy, and she really is.
I just want to show something very quick.
We're female comedians. No one's funnier than us.
No one!
Kathy Griffin. Sarah Silverman.
Fuck you!
Come on!
I just love... that was like... It was so hard because that night I talked to her about how my mother was, you know, not doing well. And she was like, she always gave me really good advice. And she said, my mother just died. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter how old they are. They're still your mother. It doesn't matter if they have dementia, if they don't have dementia, if you're expecting it, if you're not expecting it, it's your mother. She was, and then she dies before my mother. And it was so weird. And I thought to myself, you know, here we go with they're coming to pick me up. But I thought to myself, you know, I've known Joan almost as long as I've known my mother. Like I was watching her as a little girl and thinking, oh my God, who is this woman? She's so funny and she's saying all this stuff that you're not supposed to say. And she was just amazing. And, you know, I talk about that in the show, the fact that, you know, first of all, when Joan was a little girl, there were no female standups. So she had no idea until she went to see Lenny Bruce downtown, you know, and she had an epiphany that, here's this guy on stage saying the truth and making it funny. And that's what she did. She said the truth and made it funny. And she was a voice for women. She talked about gay people, you know, before
Mr.
anyone.
Phyllis.
Yeah. and she had gay people on her, that daytime show she had in the 90s, in the middle of the AIDS crisis, drag queens. She was everything. I just think she encompassed everything great about comedy.
I found this. So
oh
tell
my
me
God,
about this
where
photo.
Where was that? I don't even know
I
where that
couldn't
is.
I couldn't tell you, but you, Rachel, Sarah, Joan.
Where?
That's right there. Oh, can you not see?
What?
That's Rachel Dratch.
I know.
Sarah
Rachel
Silverman.
Dratch, Sarah Silverman,
oh,
Joan Rachel.
But I don't know where. No, I couldn't tell you where.
I want that. Can you send me that photo?
Of course I'll send it to you.
What a great photo.
But, you know, I thought to myself, you know, it's so interesting when you think about female comedians and how they all really go to one person. I mean, there were other funny women out there, but they're all like Joan's children. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think yes. I mean, and also Phyllis Diller, a lot of Phyllis Diller children. And Carol Burnett children, and Moms Mabley children.
Joan
and Toadie and Phyllis. I mean, Phyllis was a one-liner. Phyllis didn't talk to the audience. Phyllis was very self-deprecating, but brilliant. A brilliant pianist, a brilliant painter.
And so smart.
Oh,
you tell this great story in the show about how she purposefully would wear the crazy wigs and the crazy dresses because you didn't want to be too pretty.
She thought she was ugly, and she talked about she was like given an award from the Plastic Surgery Association of America. I mean, she was the first woman to talk about, yeah, I'm getting this done and I'm not ashamed. But she purposely wore those outfits because she had a beautiful body. And she didn't want it to distract the audience. And so she wore these crazy outfits. But
I think so that's brilliant. Part of all comedians. Like Joan had it. You know, we all have it to an extent that we have this image of ourselves that, you know, if you walk out on stage and think you're so fabulous, there's nothing funny about that.
No, I think it's more, I mean, maybe for a guy, but for women, you know, comedy is not a feminine, stand-up is not a feminine profession because you're in control. And we equate control and power with masculinity in this country. And so if a woman is up there looking hot and sexy, the guys are not going to take her seriously and the women are going to be like jealous or, you know, so women were so objectified and still are that there's a reason they, for the first few moments of their act would be sort of self-deprecating to disarm the audience to say, yes, I know my place. And you look at all those women of that era and they were self-deprecating. They were commenting on themselves, but once they got the audience on their side, they could say whatever the fuck they wanted. And they did. And they gave women a voice. And people like Joan talked about things that women didn't, as I say in the show, whispered about when their husbands weren't around. So I think for women, now we see sexy women on stage talking about their sexuality and talking about sex. And that's great because we've been listening to guys do this shit all the time.
Well, speaking of sexy women, you look awfully good on that stage.
You know, I had my hair dyed right after that.
So it's lighter now.
Yeah, I kind of.
But I like that. I think I love the styling. The outfit looks so comfortable.
Oh, yeah, that's
Lex,
the stylist. I love my outfit that I'm
keeping. I mean, you look so hot. And yet you look hot and powerful. Do you know what I mean? And there
that's
you are
want,
in the middle
bitches.
Of Phyllis.
Yeah.
You know, and yet you always do talk about, you're like, oh, I hate my body. I'm so overweight. That's not an overweight.
I've never said I'm overweight.
Oh, well, you hate your body. You say
I say I'm fat. I say no, but I'm over 6 feet tall. So it's always been an issue. When I first started out, it's something that I had to talk about. The minute I got on stage, because it was the elephant in the room where people were like, is she going to talk? Does she realize she's that tall? You know, and people thought that this is the word we use then. But people thought I was a transvestite. That's what they used
really?
To say in the 80s. And yeah. And I'm like, oh, my God. But yeah, once you go through the menopause, you can't lose weight. So, you know,
I found this picture. I'd never seen this before.
Oh my God, that's my
high school
graduation. I have that and I wear that necklace now because of all the anti-Semitism. My parents
but
got it.
But you're so gorgeous. What do you
so
say?
So funny. It's like it was hell. I couldn't wait to get the fuck out of high school.
Tell everybody who's Ringo.
Fuck you, Billy.
Never heard you tell this story, so tell them.
So when I was a little girl, I wanted to be a boy, which is shocking. And
Have a penis or did it go that far?
I never thought about it, about genitalia. I didn't think
about
it.
Just dress like a man.
I wanted to be a boy. I got my hair cut short and I made everyone call me Ringo or Robert. And
why Robert?
I don't know. I don't know where I got these names.
I was just going to say why Ringo, but why Robert?
And my cousin Helene still calls me Ringo and I'm like, shut the fuck up. But yeah, I was a tomboy. I loved I wanted to wear boys' clothes. I wanted to do the things that boys did. I always gravitated towards boyish things. Like, you know, I wanted to mow the lawn. I wanted to shovel the snow. I wanted to do all the guy things.
So it wasn't necessarily a sexual thing. Like in today's world, would you possibly become transgender? Like that's what I'm wondering.
I don't, you know, that's I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't think I had body dysmorphia. I think I was a tomboy and I was gay. And I gravitated towards boyish things. And I had crushes on girls.
So you put that together and it makes you want to be a boy.
I feel like look, you know, you're gay. You don't realize what it is until you're going through adolescence. You're like, oh. So I was acting out in a different way. And I wonder now with, I think about that.
In today's world, with the opportunities. Yeah.
But I never was like, but I know trans people and I know trans people who were like, when's my penis growing in? I never was like that. You know, why do I have these boobs?
I've heard trans people say they look in the mirror and hate their body.
No, I didn't have a hate for having a female body. So then you probably weren't. I didn't. Right. I was gay. And there was
Did
no
your parents allow you to dress like a boy? Like, were they okay with that?
I don't think they loved it. I don't think they...
They didn't stop.
You know, they were older, my parents. But... I don't know. You know, they let me run around and do my boyish things, but no, I still, you know, it was I was born in 62. Mm-hmm. So I think we couldn't wear pants to school Could girls wear pants at school?
Well, you know, I was born 69. They did when I was in school, but
I don't know.
That might have been my time.
My sister and I had all these like same outfits. I just wanted to get home and put on pants and sneakers but I never looked at my body and said it was wrong.
Yeah.
And I know that trans people and people with body dysmorphia, they believe they're in the wrong body. I never thought I was in the wrong body. I just thought, what the hell is wrong with me? I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And I think, you know, now when I really think about this idea of, you know, pronouns and the idea of non-binary, I understand because I don't feel all female and I don't feel all male. I'm not, I'm never going to wear a high heel. I don't wear dresses. But I'm also not really butch. I'm in the middle. So I don't identify when I think of feminine girls who are like, I'm not that. I am not that end of the spectrum, nor am I a butch on that end of the spectrum. I am right in the middle. So I understand the non-binary. But as far as gender is concerned, I am a woman. And I don't think I'm in the wrong body. I mean, I'd like to improve the body, but, and I think that some people just, and I do think, you know, now I wonder, wow, if I was born now and I had very open parents and I was like, why can't I was more like, why does he get to do that and I can't do that?
Right. It was the traits and permission.
Why does he have less rules and why did they get to play that and I have to go to sewing class? Like, that was the thing that I didn't understand.
Did you rebel against that?
Yeah. I took shop. I was like, I don't want to do this shit. But, you know, I think trans is such a deeper, I can't imagine thinking, you know, why is my body like this? It's not supposed to be like this. That I didn't have.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the pronouns, and I know that you will, and you talk about it in the show, that people will get so angry about the use of the wrong pronoun. And again, it's one thing, it's intent. It goes back to your whole argument of intent. If it's just, oh, I don't know any better, or if I'm saying, fuck you, I'm calling you she anyway. I mean, it's, there's a difference.
Right, there's a difference. So, you know, I point out the mistake when people mistakenly use the wrong pronoun. You know, you're gay. We have fought for our rights, our dignity, on so many levels. The world was the way it was, and we protested and spoke out. Our goal was for people to evolve and realize that everyone knows and loves a gay person. And now, people are, you know, there are trans people are being attacked, but they're not the only ones being attacked. Jews are being attacked. People of color are being attacked.
Women
are being attacked. And equality means everyone. And when one group is suffering, we're all suffering. And so there's a part of me that is like, look, if someone mistakenly uses the wrong pronoun, you know, like we did, I would correct them. Oh, is their father tall? They don't have a father.
Right.
You know,
and you move on.
Right.
You correct and move on.
I correct them. It's a complicated issue. And I do have a little resentment for myself, from the gay male community, that during this assault on women's rights,
where are the men?
Yeah, where are you? We were there for you during the AIDS crisis, like no questions asked. Where are you?
Not only that, I have said this again, being a little younger than you, but having come through the clubs and the community and being somewhat visible, I always would say there is no gay community if there were not women. That everything in Boston, certainly, Pride was always organized by women. The parades, the reason the women kick off the parades, because they were organizing the parade. When AIDS hit, women were the ones that were out talking the loudest because the men were afraid that if they did, they would be targeted. So, but, you know, excuses aside, you cannot deny that the women are the leaders in our community.
But yet,
not that I'm sure there's a community.
Right,
either.
But we are cast aside a lot of the time. Also, you know, a lot of gay men have children now, and they hire surrogates to have their children, some of them. And where are you? This is horrible what's going on. Also, the other problem with the trans community getting mad at the people who have fought for your rights for the last 50 years, you know, don't eat your own. Realize that we fought for you. And yet you get mad. It's just like the Democratic Party with Al Franken. Like, really? He was a comic. He didn't take that photo. There's about a billion photos of comics doing inappropriate things. If you're a comic, he wasn't an elected official at the time. It's ridiculous.
Right.
And he was a good senator.
Yeah. And a good guy.
Right.
You know, we talk about trans and that we are learning more.
Right.
The world
the
is learning
more.
More
out and visible. I am all for trans visibility.
And education. I mean, we have to educate the world. I know my mom, my whole life, would say to me, do you think you're right and the world is wrong? Or that the whole world's going to cater to you? I don't expect that, but I expect them to listen and learn and respect. Right.
Right. And so the people don't understand the trans community. They also, I don't know why they feel so threatened. If someone has gender dysphoria, which has been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect you? Unless it's your child or, you know, your parent or whatever. How is that affecting your way of life?
Well, the same way that I ask, if the woman down the street has an abortion, how does that affect me?
Right.
Now, the other side of that is, if I were somebody who believe abortion is murder, which I don't, but if I do, then I suppose I'm offended, but I don't know, how do you reconcile those two sides?
You can't, because you have religion on one of the sides.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that, a bastardization of religion, which takes all common sense out of it. You know, there, you know, you have the word liberal and you have the word conservative. Conservative means smaller. That's what it means. A conservative amount of something is a smaller amount. They're not willing to open their brains up or see the other sides of things.
Or evolve.
Or this is the way things are. I'm uncomfortable if anything changes the status quo. But that's not the way the world works. And too bad. Too bad.
Yeah, it's, you also bring up the point so often that you may hate gay people, but you sure enjoy the things that gay people have created or given you. So if you want to not like them, then get rid of your cell phones and get rid of your fashion
rid of... Yeah, the Jew, like Israel, you hate Israel. They invented the cell phone technology. They invented artificial hearts. They have clean water. You'd have no clean water. If you hate Jews, go look up, you know, don't get vaccinated. Don't go to the doctor. Just seriously. And gays, don't wear any, you know, arts, science.
Don't go to the Vatican. The Vatican is a shrine to gay men.
Right.
You know, so, all right, going back, more pictures. Okay. I love this photo.
So
tell me about these ladies.
Well, that's Whoopi Goldberg and Tammy Pascatelli. I think I was actually co-hosting The View that day.
It looks like it could be like a back dressing room.
Oh, yeah, situation. Absolutely. It's probably Whoopi's dressing room. She's great.
So what did Whoopi mean to you?
Whoopi, when I saw her her solo show in 1985 or 84, changed my life.
Did you see it in New York or San Francisco? You did.
I saw it in New York. I was...
And talk about a theatrical event.
I was so moved and in awe and... I couldn't believe it. It was so incredible. It was such an incredible night of theater. And that made me see, I mean, it really opened my eyes to what is possible.
Was it the first time you saw I guess you've just answered my question.
Yeah.
Was it the first time you saw a comedian in a theatrical setting? And I guess Lily would have predated
Lily,
that.
But you know, Lily didn't do the clubs and do stand up. You know, a lot of these people weren't at the clubs. They came from, you know, like Carol Burnett's a comedian, but I don't know if she did stand up, but yeah. So this was I was like, wow, these stories and these characters, and it was just amazing. It was amazing.
And we should mention Tammy Pescatelli's a great comedian. She's on your podcast.
Yeah, she's a really funny comedian. Yeah, she's been on.
And so people should see her. Okay. What a cute picture of you and
her.
Bette.
So,
Bette Midler, what did she mean to you?
I loved Bette. I'm friends with Bette. And that's at her NYRP, New York Restoration Project. One of their dinners. I used to host the dinners. I used to host Halloween with her for many, many years. And I wrote some of the Halloween scripts, sketches, and you know, another one that you see these Jewish, you see this Jewish woman. I mean, so fucking talented. Started out in the gay clubs.
Again, had no path, made their own path.
She's just otherworldly, really. I mean, so talented. And another brash Jewish woman. Tiny.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
I'm the big one, yeah.
You know, this one, it's with one of our mutual friends. It's Bette and Sherry. So I know, because Sherry and I, you know, talk all the time, and she was so happy to have you on her show, and she talked about how important you were as sort of a stand up and really taking control as a woman.
Yeah, she's so great. I love her. I don't know if I was a lesbian in mainstream clubs, and I didn't give a shit if the guys thought I was hot. I didn't give a shit if the male comics thought, you know, I didn't care what they thought of me. I just wanted to be a really good comic. I didn't want anything from them. And I think the guys really respected that I was, and I'm big, you know, I'm a presence. And
but you're also big electrically, you know. I've told this story before, but you used to show up at the Comedy Store in LA, and I would be there with different comedians, and you would come in and do 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and the room changed. Electrically, it changed. It was charged. And when you left the room, when your set was done, there was a vacuum. Nobody wanted to follow you because it was like you couldn't.
Well, thank you for that. I have had that problem where people don't want to follow me. People who are way more famous than me, wanting to follow me. And it's people who have been blessed throughout this business for years, and you know, and it's been I know that because I love the craft of stand-up, and I do it all the time, and I never stop, and I love it. I mean, Ophira Eisenberg said to me, she saw me do a set too, I guess she stayed in the back of the room, whatever, she said, do you still love it? And I said, oh my God, I love it so much. She goes, it's so obvious. I love it up there. I was humiliated my entire childhood to be in front of a group of people and to be able to elicit the laughter on my own terms and to perform and be in control I love it. I love trying out new material. I love everything about stand-up comedy.
And what don't you love about it?
I hate the traveling. I hate the shitty, sometimes shitty pay, the shitty treatment, the, you know, clubs trying to chase your money.
Did you like being on the road?
I hate the phones. I don't like the phones. Comedy Cellar makes everyone put their phone in a packet.
Good.
No cell phones. The phones are the end of everything. You know,
because you can't try anything out.
Well, you can't try anything out. The minute they, you know, have a ping of like, oh, let me check, you know, they're not paying attention.
Right.
They can take video. No, it does not belong in a theatrical. You know, I was doing my show. And there was someone in the front row. I think it was a Sunday matinee. Literally like this, like with the phone. Like this, and
visible.
I had to in the front row. The front row was the same level as the stage.
Yeah,
and I had to say, put your fucking phone away, and it's so distracting. And by the way, people, when your phone lights up and you think it's on your lap, and you're in a dark theater and your watch goes off, that's what we see. We're trying to focus. We're in the zone, and your fucking phone, and like, seriously. So fucking annoying.
people may not know that you worked with Rosie O'Donnell on the Rosie O'Donnell show.
Oh, that's such a great photo.
And while Rosie didn't come out right away, certainly backstage it was like a gay bar.
Oh my God, the Rosie O'Donnell show. I used to think all the time, if you know, this show was so phenomenal, and it was a phenom. I mean, it was, people were like going crazy. They hadn't seen anything like this daytime entertainment that was just, you know, Broadway show, everything. And I used to think, God, if people knew, like I used to talk to John McDaniels, people knew how gay, this is like a show put on by a group of gays and their allies. And yet you love it. And if you knew we were all gay, what would you think? But you fucking love this show. It's the other thing you were saying about then live in the world without what we've contributed. But oh my God.
Did you like working on the show behind the scenes?
I loved it. I had.
How did you get involved in it?
She, when Henry was born, Rosie was like, come over. I want to see Henry. So I went over and she's like, you know what? We have a writing position. Send in some jokes. So I sent some jokes into Jeanette, who was the head writer, and Jeanette Barber. And I sent in a bunch of jokes. And the next day on the show, she did a few of them. And then I got a call by the end of the week. Do you want to do 13 weeks? And you don't have to go on the road. Because Rosie's like, you don't want to go on the road when the kid's an infant. And I lasted 2 seasons and I became a producer of the Human Interest, all the real people, which I think I was great at because I got Rosie's sense of, I knew her sense of humor and I knew how great she was with real people. And so I did all the kids segments and all that kind of stuff. And I had so much fun. I met so many great people. We had a blast. We really did.
Do you like the business end of the business?
Hate it.
Really?
Yeah. I like the performing end of the business. Like all this other shit I can't stand.
Okay. We're going to have to wrap up because I promised you. But this is like the best photo I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, that is the best photo I've ever seen in my life.
So let's go through this backstage after a show. So go ahead, tell people this is like the history of comedy.
Elaine May.
Yep.
Jeannie Berlin, her daughter. Mm-hmm. And Elaine had Jeannie very young. And they're just Elaine May. Okay. Jeannie Berlin, so talented. Joy Behar and Renee Taylor. I don't even know.
What do you even say? You're standing there and they say, let's take a picture. And you're like, come on.
No, I said, can we please get a picture? Get a photo. But yeah, that night we had a talk back and Renee and Joy stayed. And then we went out afterwards. Renee is so fucking hilarious. Renee and Joy have both been on my podcast. Yeah. I met Elaine and Jeannie through Monica Rosenthal, Phil Rosenthal's wife, who is the greatest. She's Monica Horan. She's an actor and just the greatest person in the world. And I really bonded with them. And Joy got them all to come. We were at Renee Taylor's 90th birthday. And Joy's like, I want to come. And I was like, please come. And Elaine and Jeannie were there. And Joy's like, I'm going to get them all to come. And they came.
So she was the ringleader.
I just love them.
And you did. I should tell people. And again, your podcast, Kill Me Now. You recently replayed the Joy Behar show, which is so funny. Oh, my God. And first off, you got her to tell stories she's never told.
Right.
And what is great about your podcast is that, number one, of course, you're interested in the people because I don't think you've had anyone on that you didn't want.
Right.
But it's like eavesdropping on an actual conversation.
Yeah. And I'm changing the format. I'm doing some interviews, but you know, I do such a deep dive into people. I read their books. Mm-hmm. It's hours and hours. And I don't really get, I don't make any money from the podcast. In fact,
people watching this, she says it all the time. None of us make money. If anything, it costs us to do these.
It costs
shows.
Us. Right.
And it was so, fine during the pandemic because we all sat home and had nothing to do. And we felt, you know, it was Seth who convinced me to do it because he said, we have to keep people entertained, give them something to take their mind off of problems. But it does cost us to do this and we're happy to do it. And it's also good because we get to catch up with each other, which is lovely.
Right. So I'm doing a lot of, you know, what I'm interested in. And some interviews and people are loving it. So I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Last week you did just a half hour talking, which I love because you're so funny.
I love it. Thank you.
Are there people coming up through the ranks that you look at and say, oh, okay. They give me hope for
Yes. There's Gen Zers who are protesting in Tennessee. They give me hope.
Really?
And there are a lot of, there's a lot of really funny comedians.
Well, you're in the trenches. You're out, what is it, 2-3 nights a week still?
Well, I was going out.
You're working.
I'm doing the show, but I'm going out tonight too. Yeah, so I'm out a few nights a week, like 4 nights a week.
Wait, are you saying that you do your show and then you're going to like the Cellar and doing like another 15?
Yeah, I'm just going to do a little bit because I'm going to the Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin next week and I want to be in shape.
And you're doing just your stand-up?
Yeah, at the
You know, it's none of this show. Nice because I love that you've added in so much of the stuff that you were working on in Provincetown last summer into this show.
Well, that's why I'm doing it. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, we're going to remind people that through Sunday, yes, I can't say that, at 59 East 59th, which is Primary Stages. I think their website is probably primarystages.org.
Well, you just go to 59e59.org.
Oh, okay. Or just go to judygold.com.
Or go to judygold.com. Or on my socials, it's in the link in the bio.
You know, she's everywhere. Look, there are people. People are applauding. Scott.
Scott, I love you. I love you, Jim.
Jim Tyrell loved her. Met her at the gym in P-Town. David Rothmiller is telling us, Toadie.
Love Toadie.
And Judy does show video and talks about the toad even with rocking one leg. She was still out there.
Yeah, she was still, yeah.
Judy, I love you. You know I love you. I have to, I want to tell people one thing, though. You know, you're tough. You're in your face, but you're also so motherly and warm and genuine. When I will see you like after a show and I'll say, well, I've got to jump in the car and drive. You're going to drive 4 hours? Are you awake? Are you okay? Text me the next day. Let me know you got home.
I'm like,
I felt so bad seeing the show Friday and texted you beforehand saying, I am leaving to run and catch a plane.
I'm glad you did that because if you had left without, and I didn't know that, I'd be like,
no, because that's the thing. I should tell you that when you showed up at the theater, you're there about an hour and a half early. You walked in and I saw you. I said, let her be in her moment. This isn't a time to chit chat. There are people you don't do that with. But look, I am so proud of this show. I'm proud of this work. And I'm proud of you because you really, you know, you remind people that we've come a long way, but we've got so much more to accomplish.
Yeah.
So, thank you so much. Good luck with the rest of the run. See you soon. I swear I will see you in person.
I hope so.
All right. Thank you, Judy. Take care.
Take it easy.
Bye, honey. Thank you guys for watching Billy Masters Live. Judy, if you're still there, I will be signing off up there. She goes, she couldn't wait to say goodbye. She's in a rush. She's got places to go. Anyway, thank you for watching Billy Masters Live. Okay, I haven't talked about this, but, you know, I wanted to just have a moment with you. Hello. What are you wearing? I have been working on another project. So for the past, like, 4 to 6 months, I have other things that I do. I have a degree in marketing, and a friend needed me to participate in a marketing thing, which was great because it came at the same time that the condo in Florida had special assessment. You know, you've seen all the footage. The condos are falling apart. So I've been really busy making money and paying off these things. All of that is done. My life is once again my own. So I will be back and we will be doing more shows. I swear. I've missed doing the shows. So I can't say that it will be on any regular basis, but there will be more because we've got a bunch that I'm scheduling. So thank you for watching. Let me just remind you, because I never remind people, go to BillyMasters.com. Look at me. I'm the marketing person. I forget to tell people to go to my own website. You know, if you'd all go and subscribe, I'd be fine. Like, you know, the cheap one, like the $5. But, you know, whatever. Even with no money, I'm still doing these shows because I love it, because I'm an entertainer. All right. Thank you for watching. This has been Billy Masters Live. And, of course, I am Billy Masters. And if we're here, we're live. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.